movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
It is quite rightly seen as one of the best parts of the week. It is movies and booze, I'm delighted to say. I am joined by Esther McCarthy. And do I have Jean as well? Esther and Jean, do I have you both?
I'm here, don't worry.
Yes, that is it. Great stuff. Good to have you both with us. Before we carry on, it's a little bit different, something for you today. There's something special on Movies and Booze. We've teamed up with Lidl and Paul Flynn, the chef and owner of the tannery, to pair some delicious recipes with today's wine. So apart from enjoying today's wines, you'll also be able to enjoy some lovely little bits of food to go with it. And they're all available in Lidl stores nationwide. You can check out the videos on our Facebook page and Instagram. And there's also a chance to win a €200 Lidl voucher there. More on that later. So, but let me see, Esther, what movies are we going to be looking at today?
We have a music themed show today, Tom, especially for your good self. We have two music movies. One's called The High Note. So this in normal times, in less crazy times, this should be opening in cinemas this weekend. But unlike a lot of studios who have kind of moved their schedules around to later in the year, Universal, following the success of the Trolls movie, which, you know, took an awful lot of box office about 2 months, or took an awful lot of box office, do you hear me? Oh, God, be with the days. It took a lot of money on stream about 2 months ago. So they've now decided to release The High Note as well, with Dakota Johnson and Tracy Ellis Ross. Dakota Johnson's PA to this kind of very powerful music diva, very successful, but kind of has passed, hit her 40s and is finding the industry is not as kind to her, I suppose, as it used to be. So that's the first film we're talking about. And then we're going the other extreme entirely to a little art house documentary called The Curious Works of Roger Doyle, who was... Did you know who Roger Doyle was? Have you heard of
absolutely,
him?
Absolutely, yeah. He's a Dublin Malahide legend.
Absolute legend in the music scene, apparently. And I had never heard of him until I saw this... documentary about him, and it's really interesting. It's about him in his 60s as he gets this chance to stage one of his most ambitious ever musical projects. It's called an electronic opera, if you don't mind, called Heresy. So it's all about the process of that and about his ambitions, and then talking over his own life. And he's so influential on music. I can't really fathom how he isn't far more widely known.
He's in quite a kind of experimental field is where he works. So it wouldn't be music for the masses. He's more someone that people who make, you know, popular music doff their caps to. Think, God, he's really so creative and inventive. He's a one-off.
He's known as the godfather of Irish electronica.
Exactly. That's it, exactly. It's what he is. It's funny you mentioned Trolls there. And when you were reviewing that, I remember listening to you. And I went on because I thought the girls would love it. And it was $17.99 to rent. And I thought nobody is going to go for that. But everybody did, didn't they?
They did. I think it was timing. It was like people were going, how am I going to entertain myself at home? It was just, I think it might have been a week or two after we first went into lockdown, and people were really watching an awful lot of movies and you know, looking for something to entertain the kids. And yeah, they bought it. They went for it. I think it's too expensive for a rental. I think to buy, I'd be OK with that because that's, a little less the price of what else old people would call a DVD, ask your parents, kids. But I think it's a little bit too expensive for one watch, I think. Not that I'd want to watch the Trolls movie over and over again.
I felt that, but then Audrey was saying to me that, but if we were going to the cinema to see it with all the tickets and then the food we'd buy, we'd be down 40 or 50 euro with the two kids. So in that sense, it actually kind of makes, you know, good financial sense. So this could be part of the way it's going to go in future from what I can make out. I better have a word with Jean. How are you today?
I'm very well, Tom. Beautiful sunny day, bank holiday weekend, and everybody's going to be cooking and eating and enjoying themselves, because let's face it, there's very little else to do when you're all locked into your houses. So I've got three lovely Australian wines to share with you today. And obviously I had a look actually on the Facebook at Paul's recipes, and you know what, they're fabulous. I'm definitely going to give the chorizo and pan new potato salad one a go myself.
It's doable, is it? It's not something that you need training in or even basic culinary skills.
No. You know, it's amazing. You know, I mean, I'm not one of the world's greatest cooks. I try, but I'm not wonderful. And, you know, and suddenly when you see somebody looking, of course, they make it look so easy. That's the thing. And then when you have to do it yourself, it does never quite works out that way. But I started with Floyd back in the early 80s, and I had all Floyd's books. So I've always been a great fan of cookery shows and people teaching you how to cook, because, I mean, you never stop learning either about wine or about food. So I think this is great, and a great way to learn about it, you know.
Floyd was one of the great chefs and one of the great TV chefs. And I don't think that style of you know, becoming visibly drunk during the program, it's gone out. It's just, it's not appreciated anymore.
But I mean, he was a brilliant chef as well. You know, it was nothing to do with the drinking. It was literally, and it was all about French cooking, you know. And I mean, in those days in Ireland, like a salad consisted of half a slice of cucumber, a hard boiled egg, some butter leaf lettuce and salad cream, you know. And then suddenly he's in Périgord showing you snails and how to cook them. You know, it was kind of like, what a revelation, you know.
Yeah. But his bon vivant attitude, that just, he was, you couldn't help but warm to him. Something
lovely
about him. But
you got to remember, this was the 80s. Everything is too serious now. Everything, you know, everything is too sort of nanny state in a way, you know. It was a different time, you know. But I always thought he was wonderful, you know. And if he drank, so what?
I'm just going to throw one name at you now. I'll let people think about it. There's a chef on at the moment called the Pioneer Woman, and she comes from America. And she, all of the improvements in her diet, the lack of use of butter and stuff, they're wasted on her. She's unaware of them. And some of her favorite phrases are, "You can't have too much butter." So,
oh, my kind of woman. What's her name again?
Yes. The Pioneer Woman is her name. She's on
Pioneer Woman.
Yeah, she's on the cook on all the cookery shows. It's too fantastic. But you have three wines for us today, not just two, but three.
Yeah, we're going to, and I mean, you know, Australia, the second most popular country of origin on the Irish market. We've got the Lidl Premium Australian Chardonnay. We've got the Lidl Premium Cabernet Sauvignon from Coonawarra, which is one of the great red wine regions in Australia. And we have a Shiraz from the Barossa Valley, one of the other great wine red wine regions in from Australia.
They all look great, and the prices look amazing on them. $7.99, $8.99, and $8.99 as well. Questions for you to start, Jean. Listener wants to know, if making sangria, can you use red wine and tinned fruit with a bit of ice?
Yeah, that's perfect. Red wine, and if you want to put in a little bit of fruit juice as well, that's fine as well. It's you know, people kind of make up sangria as they go along. You know, it's really up to yourself. Don't forget though that the fruit with the tin fruit will have a bit of sweetness in it, so that might kind of jar a bit. If you had fresh fruit, it would probably be a bit better. But you know, give it a go and see what you think. Anyway, it's like it's the suck it and see principle, really, literally, if you'll pardon.
Okay, another question for you, Jean. This is how long is a piece of string? How many glasses of wine should you get from a bottle? I say three, my wife says five, and that I'm pouring lockdown measures. What is the norm?
Now, I did my class reunion. I won't tell you how many years we were out of school, and I was meeting with the manager of the venue. This is about 6 years ago. And my take on how many glasses you would get from a bottle of wine, because I work in the wine trade, was six. And when I was talking to the catering manager of the venue, he kind of laughed at me and said, well, realistically, you're talking about four. And so I had actually underestimated the amount of wine that I needed for however many people we were having for the event. And he steered me right. And, you know, he was absolutely bang on. So I would say a lockdown measure, given all we're hearing about everybody not going out but enjoying a glass or two of wine, would be a four glasses per. But three, my God, they must be big glasses, you know.
Wow. Well, that's the perfect compromise. He was saying three, his wife saying five. They're going to settle for four. That'll be a happy house. I've one more quick one for you before we have a quick film question for you, Esther. Gene, what's the quickest way to chill wine? My husband says in the freezer, but would that not crack the bottle? Asks Jennifer and Cork.
If you forget it, it does. You know, it does. I put it in the freezer, but it's not literally the old-fashioned way. Ice cubes and water, if you have them. And you can go out and buy bags of ice cubes now. And that's what I do if I want to chill something. And I have these very nifty little plastic ice coolers that I got at some wine tasting or other that I kept. And they're absolutely brilliant because you can use them in the garden. So I buy ice cubes, I put water in them, put them in my little plastic thing, and away you go. That's the quickest way.
Right. Before we go to our first wine, Esther, a listener is asking about Hustlers. I watched Hustlers the other day. Jennifer Lopez is actually a very good actor and deserves better roles than all the crappy rom-coms she gets. She's still being typecast unfairly, I would argue. What do you think? That's Orla in Dublin asking that.
I do. I agree. I think there's a films she must go for, though. They're the projects she goes for, because she's a very powerful force in the movie industry as well as the music industry. I think when she's good, she's very, very good. She was very good in Hustlers. I didn't quite buy into the whole talk around that she should have gotten an Oscar nomination. I didn't think it was quite there, but she's brilliant screen presence. And that opening scene where she's doing the pole dance is just fantastic. Like, she's a complete diva. But I thought she was great in a Steven Soderbergh film from many, many years ago called Out of Sight, if you remember, with George Clooney. It's a long time ago now. And I have rarely seen such on-screen chemistry between two stars as there was between the two of them. It was the sexiest film.
Right. So she is underrated. I think it's time for our first wine. Jean, do you want to start us off there?
Yeah. Well, as I said, the Australian wine industry is 200 and odd years old. I mean, the vine first went over with the first fleet in 1788. So they have a very long heritage, and a longer heritage than people, I presume, would imagine they have. But in the modern sense, the Australian wine industry really only began from the kind of 60s and 70s onwards. There was a time, for 25 years, Australia was the number one country of origin on the Irish market, but they've been usurped by Chile in about the last 7 years. But the Irish wine drinker still loves Australian. And the three wines we have today are just benchmark. The first one is the 2018 Lidl Premium Australian Chardonnay. It's $7.99. And, I mean, I have this here. This is actually just a lovely, elegant Australian Chardonnay. Now, in the 90s, we're talking about, let's say, we're all going back, we're doing, you know, retrospective. In the 90s, what was driving the sales of wine on the Irish market was Chardonnay from Australia, and mainly one brand, Jacob's Creek. Everybody wanted Jacob's Creek. And the thing about the Australian Chardonnays in those days, that they were quite heavily oaked. And it's a bit like today, everybody loves Pinot Grigio and everybody loves Sauvignon Blanc and everybody loves Albarino. But there was a time when the Irish consumer would only drink Australian Chardonnay, and then they got sick of it and they decided they didn't want it anymore. And now if you say the C word to anybody at a wine tasting, they, you know, practically expire in front of you because they hate Chardonnay so much. But actually, Chardonnay is starting to kind of get its second wind, shall we say, and a lot of Chardonnays now are not made the way they were back in the 90s. The use of oak is much more subtle, and certainly with this one, the wood influence is very restrained, and it's all about fruit. Now, one of the oldest Chardonnay vineyards in the world is not in Burgundy, which is the home of Chardonnay, but is in fact in the Hunter Valley north of Sydney, because it was planted there in the 1820s, and it can now lay claim to be one of the oldest Chardonnay vineyards in the world. But this particular Chardonnay comes from grapes grown in Coonawarra, which is better known as a red wine region. But it's in South Australia, and there's two premium wine areas in that part of Australia, Coonawarra and Pathaway. And, you know, the breeze, the wine region, the wine area, the vineyards are cooled by the breezes coming off the Southern Ocean. This wine has lovely tropical fruit flavors, and that's a characteristic that you would very much expect to get from an Australian Chardonnay is those ripe, lush tropical fruits, melon, you know, sometimes a bit, you know, even more exotic, you know, some of the more exotic fruits come through as well. There's a lovely hint of butter. There's a nice smidge of vanilla in here. But what this wine has in terms of its texture is it's got a good weight in it. So in other words, it's going to hold up to anything that has strong flavors. And if you're cooking with anything that has, you know, kind of very, I suppose, expansive or very defined flavors, then you want a white wine that's not going to get blown away by them. And this wine has enough fruit and power in it to stand up to anything from chili to spices, tarragon, anything that, or, you know, basil, anything you have with a lot of spice or heavy flavor in it, this will match with it. It's a lovely Chardonnay, very, very well made from a nice region, a good winemaking region, Coonawarra in Australia.
Sounds great. We mentioned earlier, Chef Paul Flynn from the tannery has a lovely recipe to go with this. Prawns with clementine, pomegranate and rosemary butter paired with the Chardonnay. To see the full recipe, it is up now on our Facebook page and Instagram pages. And you can also win a €200 Lidl voucher on our Facebook page with that as well. The hashtag today, by the way, is caravanning movies. So a few of them for you now. The Silence of the Vans. Debbie Does Westport. Sorry, Van's Labyrinth, Flask Gordon, and The 7 Year Hitched. There are just a few of them for us for this. We're going to have our next one in a minute. But what's our movie going to be after the break, Esther?
Let's do The High Note first, will we?
Okay, great. We're going to start with The High Note. We have a quick break, and we'll be back with The High Note after this.
What do you think of this? Do you think it's too booby?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. You can go.
Oh, okay, great. Thank you so much.
No, not you. You guys can go. Thank you. Great. Thanks.
Okay, bye.
Well, Margaret, yeah. Are you sure all of this is still okay with you? Because after that little show at the recording studio, I'm not sure. Because if there is something else you want to be doing, I don't want you to be here if you don't want to be here.
No, Grace, I will,
Yes?
I want to be here.
Good. Because I want to go through my closet and donate things that aren't sparking joy or whatever.
So that is our first movie today. It's called The High Note. Esther, what's going on here?
Yes, we have a diva of the highest order. Her name is Grace Davis, and she is played by Tracy Ellis Ross, and she is kind of a superstar of kind of soft soul music, I'd call it, mid-Atlantic maybe, but she's dominated the music scene for decades. And when I was watching this, I thought, God, this woman has great screen presence as this character. Like, she really just moves like a diva. She commands that kind of attention that somebody really powerful in the music industry would. So I had a Google, and it turns out she's Diana Ross's daughter.
That was a real
surprise learning this. Yeah, she's an actor. She's had a lot of TV work, but I hadn't seen a lot of the shows that she's been in. So I kind of went, wow, talk about having a source of inspiration when it comes to playing this character. So she's, you know, it's set in contemporary glitzy world, I suppose, of Los Angeles music scene. And she's great as this Grace Davis. But she's a character who's not only a kind of Devil Wears Prada diva thing going on, but she's a character you can get on board with as well, because she's kind of survived. She's a woman of colour, first of all, and she's survived in an industry, I suppose, jammed with sharks and charlatans. And, you know, it's made her tough and not one to suffer fools, including her hardworking, long-suffering manager, who's played by Ice Cube here. So she's got it all going on, but she's hit her 40s. The guys in the board meetings are starting to look like, you know, the guards look like school children. It's kind of looking a bit like that to her. So they're younger looking. They tell her their mom loves her, which annoys her no end. And she's kind of struggling to stay relevant, I suppose, in this changing world. Her idea of hell is being forced to do a lengthy stint in Las Vegas. And that's exactly what the industry thinks she should do. But she wants to make a new album. She's writing new material. And her long-suffering PA then, who you know, she's the most interesting character, Grace Davis, in it. But the film's not entirely told through her eyes. It's mostly told through the eyes of Dakota Johnson, who's her long-suffering PA for the past 3 years. They have a good working relationship, but she lets it be known who's boss as well, I suppose. But Dakota Johnson has kind of thwarted her own ambitions. She has dreams of becoming a music producer. She's mad into her music. She's a huge fan of Grace Davis's music all through the years as well. So there is a respect there for her. And she kind of decides to bite the bullet at one stage and in a meeting disputes something that a producer is saying about making Davis's music really bland and doing a remix. And she says, I'd like to produce it, I'd do it differently. So it's about whether they can get on board together. And then there's a little, it's trying to be a few too many things, this film, because they're trying to shoehorn in a romance as well. She has taken on this new act unbeknownst to her boss, whose album she's producing, and he's played by Kelvin Harrison Jr. And they have a lovely on-screen chemistry. It's only a matter of time before they start smooching. It's that kind of film. So, you know, it's about, I suppose, does she go for her own ambitions, or does she live under the shadow of this woman who she very much admires, but, you know, she wasn't cut out to be a PA long term. It's not what she came to LA for. So if all that story going on, it is, you know, it's not entirely excellent, this. It's a bit bland. Okay. It's trying to be all things to all people, yet I got on very well with it. I kind of enjoyed it. It's pure escapist entertainment, and I think for the times we live in, I was happy enough with that, you know. And then when I saw the closing credits, of course, I saw the credits of the working title films, the huge UK company set up by Tim Bevan and Eric Fellner, who really have become a captain of industry through giving you escapist cinema. Not always great, sometimes it is, with films like Bridget Jones, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Billy Elliot. You're watching this going, none of this is ever going to happen in real life. I just don't believe a word coming out of their mouths. And at the same time, it's kind of enjoyable. And I think now that Dakota Johnson is free of those wretched 50 Shades of Grey movies, it's interesting to see her take on other roles. And there's a likability about her. You can get on board with her as a character and root for her. But what I liked about is both women are a little more complex than you usually get from a mainstream Hollywood film. That's not to say it's anything other than a mainstream Hollywood film. I think they're just written well, and they're good performers, these two leads. Now, there is a what George Byrne used to call a here moment towards the end.
Ah, lads.
Ah, lads. That was all he said, Ah, lads. So there is, it's stuff happens in the final third that you kind of go, did we need that? You know, but if you're on board with it up till then, you'll have a good time with it.
That's making me want to watch it more.
see what happens.
Yes.
Seeing as we're talking about prices and rentals and you know, because this is a new title, it's universal, I went to have a check on justwatch.com, which is a really handy website I've discovered during this lockdown, because you can key in anything like from Charlie Chaplin films to new releases today, you know, and you can find out what platforms have them, whether they're, you know, free to stream or whether you have to pay. And you even get a price comparison site. So I had a look. It's on several platforms, this one, including Sky Store and Apple. And what I'm finding with the new titles is they're less inclined to vary in price. So the price must be set by the studio, I guess. It's $14.99 to rent this weekend.
That isn't bad. That's if you're watching it with somebody, it's $7.50 a go. Yeah. And if you're watching with a few people, it's even less than that. And if it is good escapism over the weekend, it is.
Everyone's gorgeous looking. There's swimming pools and stuff. It's very glam. It's glitzy. LA in the sunshine. Yeah, it's grand.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll have that, please. Thank you very much. Some of our listeners are saying they do like Jennifer Lopez, by the way. Yes, she can do all the moody and gritty movies she likes, but Jennifer Lopez's best movie is and always should be The Wedding Planner. No ifs or buts. She should have married Matthew McConaughey in real life, says Kathy V. Were they an item, were they?
I don't know. Were they?
Oh, maybe.
I have no idea. The Wedding Planner is much loved, I will say. People who like that film really like it. And it you know, it's up there in lots of people's favourite rom-coms of the last 15 years.
And they were in the movie together, that's what it was. I watched 2036 Origin Unknown last week. 2 hours of my life I'll never get back. I like science fiction movies. This was an absolute bore fest. Did you ever review that one, Dave and Kells is asking?
Yeah, we talked about it last week, actually. It's it's a really good looking film. It's a British production, even though it's set in the US. And it's a really good looking film because the guy who directed it was involved in designing video games. So the graphics and spaciness of it all looks great. But it's really, it's too derivative of other films and much better films. Like if you're trying to kind of do a homage to like the likes of Stanley Kubrick, you better make sure you make a good movie. And it's yeah, just
absolutely,
not quite there.
Yeah. Right, we're going to be heading towards our second wine in a moment, Jane. I'll just give a few texts first. One of our listeners is saying he actually gets 2 glasses of wine per bottle, and last night he had 4 glasses, and he's not very well today. That's John Kilcullen.
I'm not. He must have a huge wine glass, is all I can say.
Another listener says a quick way to chill wine is to wrap the bottle in kitchen towel and then wet the wrapped bottle under the tap. Put the bottle in the freezer for 20 to 25 minutes. That's good. That's very scientific. Yeah. That would help conduct the heat away. That's very good indeed. Right, then what's our second wine going to be, Jean?
The second wine is the 2018 Lidl Premium Australian Cabernet Sauvignon, which is $8.99. And this is from Coonawarra. Now, this is Coonawarra is in what they call the Australia Limestone Coast. And what makes this region so special, it was first planted in 1860, is that it has this very famous red soil, or as they call it, the Terra Rossa. And that really adds to the quality of the grapes grown in Coonawarra. And many of the great, great red wines, everything from Penfold's Grange, comes from fruit that's grown in Coonawarra. So Coonawarra is one of Australia's premium red wine regions. Now, Cabernet Sauvignon is probably the world's best known grape. And one of the things that makes Cabernet so special is the fact that because it's a late ripening grape, in other words, they harvest it later than they would other grapes, it's also got a very thick skin. So it makes it one of the most tannic grape varieties, which is what makes it work really well with food. But actually, this one is not very tannic. It's very, very fruit forward. And it's a very New World style Cabernet Sauvignon. Now, some of the characteristics you'd expect to get from Cabernet Sauvignon are black currants. And sometimes if you get New World Cabernet from either Chile or Australia, you'll get a minty or eucalyptic characteristic to it, but not actually with this one. It's just pure fruit. So what I'm finding with this, it's a very fruit-forward style of red wine. You're getting gorgeous blackcurrant fruit going through. This would be great with any sort of beef or lamb or Sunday roast. I mean, it's a long weekend. People might, do something on the barbie with, barbecuing lamb or beef or whatever. This would be super wine to go with it. I know you've got another recipe from Paul you're going to talk about, but the chorizo obviously in it is that lovely spicy sausage and it would go very well with this. This is a yummy, very drinkable Australian Cabernet Sauvignon that has tons and tons of blackcurrant fruit. And for $8.99, a star, absolutely.
Can't go wrong. The dish that Paul Flynn has created is a delicious warm new potato, chorizo and goat's cheese salad, which is paired with the wine. And that is up now on our Facebook and our Instagram pages, facebook.com/NewsTalkFM and at NewsTalkFM. And remember, you can win a €200 Lidl voucher there as well. Time for a quick break. One more movie and another wine after these. Esther and Jean are with us. We'll have our second movie in just a moment, but Caravanning Movies is the hashtag today, and a few more of them. Nace Road to Perdition, Roadside Story, One Drove Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Harry Potter Noodle, and Apocalypse Row. I don't think they're quite as good as the first ones that we had, and Debbie Does Westport is still my leading one. Jean, I have a few questions for you. A listener says we moved house in February and the kitchen is one of those built-in wooden wine racks above the fridge. Is it okay to store red wine there, or will the fridge below it damage the wine, asks Marion.
No, well, I mean, the fridge, once the fridge door is closed, the fridge is cold. But I think she probably means that would there be heat emanating from the fridge that might go upwards. And you know what? It just might do, because heat rises. And if there's any heat being generated from the fridge running on a daily basis, it might, but I wouldn't imagine it's that much. So whoever built the kitchen before you obviously didn't have a problem with it, because that's why they put the wine rack there. I would say give it a try. I wouldn't put anything terrific there, but I mean, realistically, nobody's going to be store, you know, that's not somewhere you're going to store your fine wines that you're going to kind of keep for a long time. So just put the everyday drinking stuff that you're drinking in there, and it's probably not going to be there that long. So I wouldn't worry too
Hopefully
much about it.
Hopefully not. No. And a question, a listener saying, not a wine question, but I've only learned there's egg white in whiskey sours. Why? It sounds disgusting. I don't know, are cocktails part of your remit as well, Jean?
Egg white is part of one of my favorite drinks. I had it in Chile, was a pisco sour, which is the same principle, and they use the spirit pisco to make it, and it's their kind of native drink. It's absolutely beautiful, and they use egg white. And for me, it kind of makes it it's part of the theater of cocktails, you know. But if you don't like egg whites, don't drink it. That's all I'd say, because there's other people who do, and I think it's lovely. So again, it's like, why do some people eat vegetables and other people won't touch them? It's all down to personal preferences. So
I wouldn't let the egg white put me off my whiskey sour. No, I'll tell you.
No.
No way. Right then, it is time for our second film. This is it.
I can't quite remember how it was born, but my memory, whether it's correct or not, is that Roger and I were in Holland. We were in Amsterdam over Christmas, and we talked about this, forming this kind of entity that would be both a produce music theatre and be a band. So it was always going to be both things. The two things didn't always integrate. They were like two separate streams, actually, that weren't always the same, you know, but obviously Roger and I were common to them both. Our aim was to create performances that in which music was a key element.
And that is from the curious works of Roger Doyle. Tell me more, Esther.
Yeah, that's Olwen Furrer, the Irish actor there, I think, talking. And that's it's funny that this guy wasn't on my radar, Roger Doyle, because he was kind of instrumental in a lot of film and documentary making in kind of, you know, that first wave of pioneering filmmakers from the 70s and 80s. People like Cathal Black, whose film Pigs he scored. And people like Bob Quinn, who went on to become very successful in RTE. So he has, you know, he's been involved in lots of film scoring, and I'm just really curious, having watched the documentary, to find out more about him. And that's why I'm giving the documentary a thumbs up, because that's exactly what documentary filmmaking should do. So it's set when he's in his 60s, so it's kind of recently enough made. It's touted as, I suppose, his final opportunity or last chance to kind of finally bring his music to a wider audience. As you pointed out, his music is very niche. I mean, he's called the Godfather of Irish electronica, and his music is very unique, though. And thankfully, the music is front and center of this documentary, because it goes back through, you know, all the decades of his work, and it uses quite interesting visuals to tell that story of that music as well. It's a very, very well made film, and features the man himself, of course, who doesn't, you know, it's a nice pitch to say this is his last chance to be famous, but he wears it very well. He's a very calm type of character. He's very good company, I would say. He loves going down to the post office near his home to personally pack CDs that are ordered from all over the world via his website, and he writes a little note and sends them off, and he kind of likes that rather than a bigger manufacturing process. But it is strange how somebody so celebrated, I suppose, not just in Ireland but abroad, we see him in Paris performing at one stage as well, I suppose, didn't become more mainstream when you see kind of, I suppose, with the likes of Kraftwerk, what they managed to do with electronica. And I think maybe this guy was just a little bit ahead of his time, maybe, you know. Had you ever...
More experimental than them, to be honest. Yeah, I would have come across him down the years. Kraftwerk started off extremely, experimental. But then over about the fourth album, they became quite pop orientated, and loads of their hits like The Model and stuff and Neon Lights.
And that's how they're very found accessible. Success.
Yeah. He wasn't trying to go, and he was very experimental in soundscapes and pushing forward what was possible as he remains. But it is beautiful stuff. And is it that Alwyn Furr, I heard, the actress in it?
Yeah, that's her. Yeah, she's a close friend of his and has also collaborated with him. And just, I love, like, you know, I love, maybe he's doubled down then in terms of experimental work, because he's, we meet him when he's trying to get his electronic opera called Heresy off the ground. And it's about a Renaissance philosopher named Giordano Bruno, who was tried for heresy at the Vatican, if you don't mind. If you want to get away from the mainstream, there you have it. And it brings us to that performance. It's a really good, you get to witness a lot of the opera in the film's later scenes. And it's really special. Like, the guy obviously has... a real talent, you know, and it's a very unique film. Yeah. It's as niche as they come, I would say.
And where is that available?
Certainly interested in it. This has done the festival circuit already, but they've put it on the Irish streaming website Volta, and you'll get it there from today for a fiver. And I will say Volta's worth having a look around at the moment, because they're running a campaign at the moment celebrating Irish film, and they've put up a lot of the better movies, Irish releases of recent years online, pretty cheap to rent. So it's worth having a gawk there, I would say. And I will say as well, on Monday, film of the year, if not the decade for me so far, will be on Volta to stream as well. And that's Bong Joon-ho's Parasite, the Oscar-winning Korean film from earlier this year. Everyone will be able to rent that. If you haven't seen it, if you didn't get to see it in cinemas, you'll be able to see what all the fuss is about from Monday when it's streaming on various websites.
Brilliant. Jean, we've time for one more wine, I think. What is it we're going to have?
We're going to have a look at the 2017 Lidl Premium Australian Shiraz, which is $8.99. And actually, 2017 was one of Australia's biggest vintages. Barossa is north of the city of Adelaide. So if anybody knows where that is, that's where the Barossa is. And it's not your average Australian wine region. It's quite hilly. It's got a whole range of microclimates. There's quite a lot of rain there as well, which is kind of unusual a bit for Australia. It's quite warm during the day, but it does get cool at night. And some of the greatest wines made from Shiraz are made here. So this is actually lovely. I mean, what I love is there's a lovely chocolatey twist to it. It's actually, when I tried it after the Cabernet, it's not as, shall we say, robust as the Cabernet Sauvignon. It seems much softer, but it's got a lovely kind of soft vanilla, blackcurrant fruit again, and that just little chocolate twist that just adds that extra sort of something to it. So Barossa Valley Shiraz, Lidl's premium range, $8.99, very good value.
Fantastic. Am I out of questions for you? I don't think anyone has anything else they want to ask you. You've exhausted them. Jean, thank you very much for that. And Esther, thank you very much for that as well. I have some breaking news for you all, by the way. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has confirmed schools will reopen at the end of August. He has said it was not a no-risk scenario, but we know it is a low-risk scenario. And secondary schools and primary schools will reopen fully at the start of the school year. There's going to be more to come with that after 4 o'clock. And also, Ivan's going to be joined by Michael O'Leary, so make sure to stick around for that after 4 o'clock as well. Esther and Jean, thank you both very much today, as always. And thanks always also to the team putting the show together today. Ashton O'Reilly, Claire Collins, Michael Quilligan is on sound. Ivan has the Heart Children next. It sounds unmissable. And I'll be back with you on Tuesday. So have a great bank holiday weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.